What's up, everybody? It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative, and today we're with Josh Crutchmer, a journalist, author, a man of many talents. So how are you, man? How you doing?
How's it going? Glad to be here.
Yeah, man, we've been looking forward to having you. I guess I'll let you kind of tell everyone what you do so I don't miss any bullet points. So if you want to go ahead and kind of introduce yourself and give the run around on what you do, go ahead.
All right, you got it. So I am a journalist and an author. My day job these days is at the New York Times, where I'm the planning editor. But most of you guys know me from the contributions I make to Rolling Stone. And that is because the New York Times isn't heavy on the Americana scene and the country music scene, but Rolling Stone is. And so they are very graciously let me contribute to Rolling Stone. And that's what I've done for about the last 4 or 5 years. And of equal importance, I suppose, are the three books that I have written or am writing. Red Dirt came out in 2020. Motel Cowboy Show came out last year. But this year, December 13th, Red Dirt Unplugged will catch the whole world up on the last 4 years of this scene that we're kind of all from and that is my default home, and all of the wonderful things that have happened to Red Dirt in the last 4 years, and the meteoric rise of folks like Wyatt Flores and Southall and Caitlin Butts, and the nice second chapter for The Great Divide. So that comes out December 13th. It's called Red Dirt Unplugged. People can pre-order it right now, and that's a great help. And that is my story.
Right on. And yeah, and for those who haven't yet, I encourage you to pick up Red Dirt, the Red Dirt book, because as someone who was kind of, I guess you could say, just accidentally stumbled upon the Red Dirt scene myself, I got to learn a lot about the backstory of bands like Cross Canadian Ragweed, The Great Divide, all them guys. And it really is, it gives you an insider look, because Josh, you were around then, like you were around since the beginning, right?
Exactly. I was in, I went to school at Oklahoma State University in Stillwater, and I was a journalist then too. I wrote for the campus newspaper, the Ocali is what we called it, short for Daily Ocalegian. And my job ostensibly was sports editor, but just like you, I stumbled upon this music scene we call Red Dirt over at the time it was the Wormy Dog Saloon down on the strip south of campus in Stillwater. And I used to watch Cody Canada and Mike McClure and Jason Boland and Tony LaRue. They would all play for free every single night of the week down there. And if you got bored with that, you could go two or three more bars down and you could catch the Flaming Lips and All-American Rejects playing for free. And once I realized that I was probably in an era of something special, I just started writing about it. Even when I was 21, I was trying to document what I was seeing. And at the time, that was probably a big deal for especially Ragweed and Boland and Stoney, because that was a lot of what made up their early press kits, where they would just take clippings of stuff I had written and send it around to radio stations around the country trying to get attention. So to bring that full circle 24 years later and now have a real platform where I can share the scene that I am from, that's really cool. And I really like doing it.
Right. And as you know, more than anyone, Stillwater is like, well, I think it's one of the coolest music towns, like in my personal opinion, because it, like you said, not only did you have like the literal birth of the Red Dirt scene there to what we know it is today, there's also, like you said, like the Flaming Lips, the Rejects, all them guys are from there too. And I guess when you saw it all kind of grow and you went to the Wormy Dog and you went and see him play at all these places, these the younger incarnations of Ragweed and Boland and all them, would you ever think that it would have such a huge impact as it does today on not just the Red Dirt scene in general, but I think all of country music at this point? Because a lot of people in Nashville, like they, even them, like they take a lot of influence from guys like Cody Canada and all them guys.
What I thought at the time was I thought we had something special, but I thought it was on a much smaller scale. So I'm living in Stillwater, and who is still living there in this scene at that time would have been Boland and Stoney in the Yellow House, that little house south of campus that became sort of famous as part of Red Dirt lore. And which got moved in Stillwater, you can still go see it now. It's just not in the same spot. But at that time, like my friends and I would sit around and talk, and we knew we were getting to see that those two guys played just about every single night in Stillwater when they weren't touring. And we would always talk about it on such a small scale. Like, wouldn't it be cool if what we're seeing right now was what Stillwater got to experience way back when Cody Canada and Mike McClure were here, and we'd be talking about like 3 years earlier. It was so we just didn't realize the scale of it yet. We knew we had something special, but looking back on it now, and you can draw a straight line from the Great Divide to Cross Canadian Ragweed, and then you can take that line and you can draw it through Texas, and you can get all the way up to Parker McCollum mm-hmm. and Cole Wetzel, or you can stick in the red dirt side of the equation and you can get yourself right up to Turnpike Troubadours and Wyatt Flores and Caitlin Butts. And all of those people were like just absolutely directly influenced by the folks that we weren't taking for granted. We just didn't realize at the time how long lasting their reach would be. So what I tell people now, and what I'll tell you now, is I look at it like we were walking a tightrope with red dirt for all these years, but we didn't realize it was a tightrope until we got right to the end of it and looked back. And you realize that this thing could have gone any direction, and it went one very specific direction that keeps these just wonderful ties to this music that I got to see. And I don't know what people in Seattle when grunge was in its infancy, or what early Motown felt like, but looking back on what we got to live through in Stillwater was super special.
Right. So like when you look back at those group of bands and artists that are kind of like grouped together, like Boland and Ragweed, all them guys, is there like, if you had to choose like one band that might've made it pop per se, like that really kicked the door in, would there be like one certain act, or was it like truly a group effort?
The band that kicked the door in was Cross Canadian Ragweed.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that has happened in Red Dirt since, rise of the Turnpike Troubadours to arena shows, the fact that Wyatt Flores might be playing stadiums, the fact mm-hmm. that Caitlin Butts can get a real proper set time at a big festival. Hell, even the fact that Southall can play amphitheaters now.
Yeah.
All of that is rooted in the doors that Ragweed kicked down from about 2001 to about 2008. Mm-hmm. There had been bands with record deals before them. There had been bands, the Great Divide being very much one of them. Go all the way back to the Tractors and Steve Ripley even. But what Ragweed did out of Oklahoma that was different than that was they went to Nashville, they went on the national country music scene, and they very much flaunted and showed off who they were, where they were from, and made people curious about it.
Yep.
And they did all that without changing one single thing about themselves. And so now you look around, and we've had two decades of Dierks Bentley name dropping Ragweed in a song. You have Cole Wetzel, one of his biggest hits is about missing that man. And you have Brent Cobb out there with the name-dropping song that he put out. And the line he has in there was, when I moved to Nashville, everybody wanted to be Cody Canada. And he's right. That's what the world was like then. And so you know, I think it would be really fun to imagine that everything would have happened exactly the same way had Ragweed not put all those dents in the doors and holes in the ceiling. But frankly, even if it had, we wouldn't want it that way because the story isn't as good. And so Ragweed was the one that really reset the trajectory of Red Dirt.
For sure. And like, and I think that goes, like, it shows that today with these bands that do take influence from them, that are from, you know, the Red Dirt scene and like the adjacent way, the Texas scene, like Cole Wetzel, Reed Southall. Yeah. Now it is Southall, but like, it's like the guitar driven, like, cause what I like to talk to like some of these like artists on here is, when I love talking about like genre bending and stuff. And, people think of Oklahoma and Texas music who aren't from there. A lot of them just think, oh, okay. Like George Strait, like you know, like just old traditional Western sounding kind of stuff. It's like, well, like if you look in, at like Red Dirt music, that's rock. That's rock music. There, and then on the other side, you have the Great Divide, which is, you know, it's all different. And I think that's the cool thing about it is because you can't really put a certain style on it. At least I can't. If you had the label Red Dirt Music. So is there, if you had to describe what that music sound is, the style is, how would you describe it?
I think it's original. I think the lyrics are always in some way evocative of Oklahoma. It might be real subtle, but I think the Turnpike Troubadours are a great example of that. Mm-hmm. When Evan Felker opens his mouth, you just hear Southeast Oklahoma. And so it's Stoney LaRue, you know, his cover of Oklahoma Breakdown that Mike Hosty wrote, probably is the most extreme example of that. But Red Dirt is, it's original, it's tethered to Oklahoma, and it's encompassing of a whole lot of styles. There's a country edge to Red Dirt, there's a rock bend to Red Dirt, and there's a folk bend too. And that has to do with the fact that it goes all the way back to Woody Guthrie. You can trace the scene back there. It just didn't become what it is today until the Divide, Ragweed, Bolin, and Stoney, and then the wave that came after them that was Turnpike and Southall, all built upon each other.
Yeah. And I think a very unique thing about that whole scene, that whole area, is that it, and I learned a lot of it from your book actually, is that they all worked together and they all like helped each other out. And it seemed like you could call it a subgenre or a genre, but it seems more of like a community or a culture. And yeah, go ahead.
That's what it started out as. You know, we always just felt that it was just more a way of life. It was campfire songs and hippie vibes. And it really wasn't until it took off when Bolin, Ragweed, and Stoney, when they got real traction in Texas, and then some of those artists moved there. And during that time, and after the real peak of Charlie Robinson and Pat Green, but before this this wave that was Parker and Co., during that time when Ragweed was kind of at the very top of the Texas music scene, Red Dirt then became a term of art. It became a marketing phrase. And you would see words, you would see radio stations all around Texas, or festivals all around Texas and Oklahoma for that matter, using phrases like Texas Red Dirt Music. And that's all. That's fine, because that meant that Red Dirt had gained such traction in the minds of music fans that it needed to be part of the label. And anyone that's been to Texas and experienced that state's pride and everything being bigger there knows that it's not an easy thing to get somebody to take a phrase as universally understood as Texas music and add something to it. So when they started calling it Texas
Red Dirt Music, much less from Oklahoma.
Of course. Yeah. Right. Of course that's not an actual scene or genre, but it was their way of welcoming that group of bands into their scene. And now it's kind of all one. You can have different directions that the sound goes once you're there, but Red Dirt becoming so not just understood, but there being such a demand for it and people not being able to get enough from it back when it wasn't as accessible as it is right now, was what caused all that. And it was Red Dirt that spread out, and it was the other scenes that welcomed Red Dirt in. And I think that's really cool. That's one of the best compliments I think you could pay a music scene.
Right. Yeah. So, and you basically kind of answered it there, but like when people do use Red Dirt as like a term for music that isn't from Oklahoma, like you don't think, like it's, like you said, it's more of like a compliment now. Like I imagine back then it was probably like, no, that's our music. I don't know. Like,
I was possessive about it. I was super possessive about it. But I also can remember 2001 or so jumping in Ragweed's van and riding with them down to Texas venues. And one of my things that I like to do, because I was just a kid along for the ride, I thought, but I had a nice voice. I was in radio for a while. So one of the things that I thought was really fun to do would just be to go on stage and introduce bands at bars or festivals. And I would do that. And 2001, when I would just say the word Oklahoma out loud, you know, all right, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, the boys from Oklahoma are coming up right now. And just, there would just be a smattering of boos. And I remember the first time Ragweed got booked at the Philadelphia Folk Festival, which is a huge event. Their last show before they went up there for that was at Lucy's in Austin. And I, introducing them, I go, and next week at this time, this band is going to take this music all the way to Philadelphia. And it was just boos drowning out, because Texas felt, you know, that very, very possessive, you know, feeling and spirit about the music that was there. And they didn't want to share it with anybody. And so it was seeing that made me get really abrasive and defensive when Red Dirt started becoming tossed around. But over time, I realized that was the only way Texas was ever going to truly welcome that genre was by adopting it as their own. And I learned to realize that was fine. And the reason that was fine is because we always, always, always just wanted to spread the word of this music. And that's where it got taken. And I came all the way around. And if you, in the Red Dirt book that came out in 2020, when I wrote that, there's a lot, I spent a lot of time dissecting this and breaking down why it's okay that Red Dirt no longer means Payne County and Stillwater, Oklahoma. But what I really wanted to drive home with Red Dirt, and what I try to drive home in the sequel, Red Dirt Unplug, and what I try to drive home when I write about artists from there, is how tethered and tied they are to what I remember is Red Dirt. The biggest band going, the Turnpike Troubadours, you can trace their roots to Stillwater, Oklahoma. Wyatt Flores, soon to be the biggest band going. Without the Great Divide, there's no Wyatt Flores. So I like being able to say that. And the phrase that I use a lot is, here's where the music you like comes from. And so that, to me, is where I will always keep a tie to those old school Red Dirt days that felt like us against the world. I just like reminding people that all the stuff they're enjoying now came from that era. And that's what's been super fun and continues to be.
Right. And speaking of like Mike McClure, like, I think if there was one name out of that scene, like today when I just talked to the South Hall guys not too long ago, and they even mentioned it. Even more than Cody, sometimes I feel like they always mention Mike McClure's like the reason, like the Great Divide or the like the glue kind of that really everything got kept together and like that really helped out the genre. Do you see that for sure?
Here's 100%. I see that. And part of it is because the Great Divide were really good. And then the Great Divide went off and became a great story when they broke up and they all, except for McClure, got out of music, and then they came back together to make more music better than they were before. So they're a great story by themselves. But what you're talking about and what Southall means, and what I mean when I say it, is that they weren't just this ragtag grassroots, pull yourselves up and force your way into the national lexicon on your own band. They were also pulling everybody up with them. So yeah. Ragweed opened for them forever. For the longest time, the College Days Festival in Stillwater was headlined by the Divide, but the support was Bolin, Stoney, Ragweed. And eventually Ragweed flipped that script, but then they started doing the same thing. And when they stopped being so regional, they started doing it with Texas bands too. And Wade Bowen would open for Ragweed. Randy Rogers spent 2 years opening for Ragweed, and ultimately Ragweed's management became Randy's management. But that all ties back to the Great Divide. And then Mike McClure goes off and becomes one of the best producers in all of music. Most people don't know that McClure produced the very first Whiskey Myers record. They probably don't know that Mike McClure produced Diamonds and Gasoline, the Turnpike Troubadours, you know, that they call it their debut album. And most people understand that to be so. That's one of the best debut albums in all of music, and maybe the best album the Red Dirt's ever seen. That was recorded in McClure's basement when he didn't really know what he was doing. So Mike McClure just wills this just huge influence over the scene and over the artists who are making a difference right now.
Yeah, and I think that I got the opportunity to interview him, and it was, I don't think I've met someone so like humble, like to have such a large influence and presence in that area and be helpful to so many artists and really boosting their careers like Turnpike and Whiskey Myers. Like, I've never met someone so humble, I think. Like, he's just insightful. The dude is so smart. Like, he would go on and on about all this really cool stuff. Like, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, and I was, you know, that happened because McClure got humbled by the industry, by the end of the Great Divide, by his own missteps. There are people that go way back with him that know him as probably the most talented musician they ever saw and one of the best songwriters they ever saw, and a big jerk. And he got humbled by the industry. He got humbled by his own personal life. He went out and found himself a rock bottom, and then he pulled himself out of it. And when he came out on the other side, he was this introspective, sober, just nicest person you ever met. And like that, you knew he always had that in his heart. And now nothing bothers him. And if something bothers him, he figures it out and gets it over with. He's a sounding board for me. He's a sounding board for a lot of artists in Red Dirt. And the fact that he's still doing it and still impacting this scene after going through all those life changes, that's a really cool story. And I this summer I had the chance to join the Great Divide on their Opry debut, and I was in their bus with them, and I wrote about that, and that's in the current issue of No Depression. If you get that journal, that's out there in the print journal, and I loved writing that. And Red Dirt Unplugged is my attempt to tie what the Great Divide became to this new world of Red Dirt. And to do that, I spent a year with the Great Divide. I spent a year with Wyatt Flores and just weaved all those stories together and made it really feel cohesive and fun. And the time that I spent with the Great Divide and the time that I got to spend sitting just like you did across from him with a microphone, and I'm asking him questions and just hearing how grateful he is to still be doing it, was just one of the best things I've ever got to experience. And you're exactly right. He wields massive influence, and he's also very self-aware now and understands that he's got a responsibility to music and to himself, and he just handles it so great.
Oh yeah. And before we get to Red Dirt Unplugged, I meant to ask you a few of these questions earlier. Going back to when you first started writing, I meant to ask you, were you writing for the Ocali, right?
Yeah.
So were you writing for that before you got in with the music scene, or was it vice versa? Or
I was doing that before, but it was basically, I was always going to be a sports journalist. So I don't get to Oklahoma State until the middle of my sophomore year, and immediately I start writing sports for the Ocali. But as soon as I turn 21 and I discover the Wormy Dog Saloon and this music that is just something that felt at the time groundbreaking, certainly wasn't what was on the radio. The second I felt like I was a part of something really special, I wanted to start sharing that. So I would say of the 3 years I spent at Oklahoma State, I didn't really start writing about Red Dirt heavily until that last year. The very first time I interviewed Ragweed was the fall of my senior year. In fact, it would be, Jesus Christ, 24 years ago this week. The roof of Lucy's Retired Surfers Bar in Austin. I sat with the whole band, then I put my recorder down in the middle of it. And just asked them, and I remember Jeremy Plato, their bass player, just talking about when a crowd would sing a Ragweed song back to them and the whole place would just be in unison, and he would go, man, you can't put a price on that. I think the word he used was value meter. You can't run that through a value meter or a checkout stand. And they just stuck around with me, and he was right. And so there were some darker times too. The chapter 10 of Red Dirt, I got into it and talked about really, really, really hounding and pressing the Oklahoma State basketball program and their then media relations director to let me travel with the team to a game, and then backing out of that request when Ragweed released Highway 377 at the Wormy Dog. And the trip that I was so adamant that I should go on, it ended up being the 2001 plane crash. And I obviously don't know where they would have stuck a college journalist, but the media, the rest of the media that went with the team was on the plane that crashed. So I've always had a really, really soft spot about that for myself too. And part of the Ragweed song On a Cloud is alluding to that experience that I had with them in that night. And it's bigger than that, because Cody made sure Cody Canada, when he wrote it, made sure that he wanted to make it for everybody, but that was heavily on his mind when he wrote it, and he played it for me before it was ever played in public. And so there were some times in college that Red Dirt for me took a very dark and different turn. But when I came out of it on the other side and realized that I had these connections and there may not be anybody else in a position to tell the stories of those artists like me, I set out to find a way to do that. Now here I am actively doing it with no signs of slowing down, no reason to slow down. And I got to go back in 2021 and write an essay for the New York Times, not Rolling Stone, for the New York Times about the lessons I learned from 2001 and that plane crash, and how important it was to me and how it kept me tied to Oklahoma State all these years later. And that was really big for me, you know, from a cathartic standpoint. And once that was done and out in the world, and I felt like that bit of a weight was lifted, I really, really, really set out with, you know, just absolute all cylinders firing, trying to tell as many of these stories as I can, as long as I have the platform to do it. And, you know, it's paid off as a journalist, but it's also like, it's been really good for me just in general, because I always feel most at home when I'm around Red Dirt anyway, and I live in New York, and the fact that now I have an excuse to go anywhere I want in the world to experience Red Dirt and the broader Americana and country scenes and rock scenes, knowing that I have a part in sharing it, that's fucking kick ass, man. I wouldn't trade that for anything.
Right. Yeah. And going and with the plane crash, like even these days when I was working at Oklahoma State, just like walking around campus, like it still has, whenever that comes around, like that date comes back around, like I feel like there's still there's like a sense of community that I got to see. And I guess it's pretty, I'd assume like that's just carried on all these years there. And, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, and I think it was from your book. Were you with Cody and them when it was going on? Like at a show?
Yeah.
Tell me a bit about that.
That was why I stuck around Stillwater that weekend, was to go to the Highway 377 album release party at the Wormy Dog. And we watched that play out on the TVs around the bar. Like they were supposed to be playing, but everyone's kind of in shock, and the place was packed. It was sold out, and there were just TVs on with the news. And, you know, there were just gasps and tears and cries, and it was a horrible night. And I remember about midnight, everyone just in this like fit of depression didn't really know what to do. And Cody said, we're going to go ahead and play just because we don't know what else to do. And then they did, they played a show, and it was as cathartic as it sounds. It was as distracting and needed that night, as anything was. Now, one of the things that also came out of it was that sense of community that you see every year when you're there, and that you saw when you live there. And the, you know, the remember the 10, because that's how many people died in that crash, is a thing. It's an event. And, you know, I don't talk about these people and this family often, but I'm going to do it right here, right now. And, one of the people I was very close to that, was lost in that crash was his name was Will Hancock. He was the media relations director for the basketball team. He was the one that was trying to broker me getting to some of those games that season. And he died, and he left behind a 2-month-old daughter, and his widow was then the coach of the soccer team at Oklahoma State. And the coach was Karen Hancock, and the 2-month-old baby was Andrea Hancock, who I call Andy. And now she's a college graduate, went to Northwestern. She's now a journalist, and we're really, really, really good friends. And she is the editor of Red Dirt Unplugged. I told you I was going to tie this all together, and I just did. So that's,
yeah.
I mean, in addition to having, you know, lots of feelings and having become very close to that particular family, Andy being a part of Red Dirt Unplugged, like, this is about as much as I can say about it, because I'll get all teary-eyed and emotional, because it's really cool.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome that it tied back like that, man. And but yeah, well, let's go ahead and talk about it. Red Dirt Unplugged, like you said earlier, coming out December, what was it?
December 13th, and you can pre-order it right now at reddirt-unplugged.com. And right, I hope you do, because just like 90% of the artists that you talk about on this podcast and that I write about, I put these books out that I write independently, and it's not necessarily because I think I get a better deal that way, or that I don't have, you know, dreams of some publishing company backing a truckload of money up to the front door. It's not that. It's that I want to write and release the work that I come up with covering these guys the same way they put their music out. And they put their music out independently. And when I put my first book out, that was the pandemic year, and I spent most of it just ordering a bunch of stuff from independent artists like Cody Canada or American Aquarium, and just reverse engineering how they operated. And then I used that to figure out how I was going to release and sell the books that I did. And it went over great, and I wouldn't trade it for anything, because now I'm not answering to anybody except the editor. Hello, Andy. And that also, but it means that I can do anything I want with these books. So Red Dirt Unplugged will hit stores and it'll cost $24.99. But if you're really, really into some of the big picture artists or topics in that book, like Southall, The Great Divide, Wyatt Flores and Caitlin Butts, there'll be a special edition for you that tacks on a really big bonus chapter at the end that's just all behind the music. Something that has nothing to do with the stories that are that Red Dirt Unplugged is trying to get at, but they're just fun, you know. If you want to hear, if you want to read Caitlin talking about some of the music she wrote, or you want a review of just some pretty cool Southall shows that I've got to see, or you want my own take on 100 years of Kane's Ballroom, I get to put out all these different special editions of this book. And they're all, you can go pre-order them right now too. And, but what that does is it allows me to share my work both with the casual and the curious that just want to go order on Amazon, or the diehards, which I am one, that want something that's going to feel like this collector's edition that I could never do if, you know, Simon and Schuster showed up and tried to offer me a book deal. So I love doing it the way that I do it. It's a lot of work, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. And as long as my day job is at the Times, I'm still governed in whatever I do by the New York Times codes of conduct. So everything has to be vetted, edited. It has to be true. So, at this point in my life, I got a good thing going, and I'm going to try and make the most of it, which you guys will help me do by pre-ordering Red Dirt Unplugged.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, I'm going to have to get the Southall one, man, because like that was my first, that's the only reason I even know about Red Dirt, was because I was in Stillwater and I wanted to see, I love concerts, and I was like, oh, there's a place called the Tumbleweed. I should check that out. And the band playing there was Southall with Austin Mead opening. And yeah, ever since then, I was hooked. It was great. And
did you see that story? If you read the original Red Dirt book, you see the Mead part where he was like 13 years old and just wandered up to, in the middle of a Cody Canada show, and he got thrown on guitar during a break. That was one of the coolest things.
Yeah. I love Austin, man. Austin, he's a great guy.
Austin is a great guy and a fun hang. When Austin comes to New York to this day, he will call me up and be like, all right, where are we going? And I will find the diviest dive bar I can find, and we will go there. And nobody will know we're there, and it's going to be a blast. Austin he's super cool.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So when you were writing Unplugged, Well, I guess before that, were you planning on doing this next edition of it when you were writing the Red Dirt book, or was it kind of just popped up out of nowhere?
It popped up out of nowhere. And so put out Red Dirt in 2020, and then I thought I would move on. And I did. I moved on and I wrote The Motel Cowboy Show, which is about music from the mountains, but it's also Reckless Kelly. And I was in a fortunate enough position in 2022 to learn that they intended to retire from the road, and that ended up becoming a Rolling Stone piece. And so I just thought, I have to spend 2023 documenting that music scene. And I did. It's one of my favorites in the world. And Reckless and the Braun family are both personally and musically special to me. And so that's what I did that. And I really enjoyed it because it got me out of my Red Dirt comfort zone a little bit, although there were still tons of Red Dirt ties. But it got me into some places that I didn't know about, and I got to learn about a whole lot other, another music scene that was equally influential on me and the people who I like. And it goes back to the idea of where the music you like comes from. Then at about the same time, I watched The Great Divide just sweep the Texas Music Awards last year. And I got asked to do, last year at about this time, I got asked to do a Rolling Stone story that was just kind of a state of Red Dirt. And that story was Southall, Wyatt Flores, Caitlin Butts, and Lance Rourke. I interviewed them all. And that sort of got me thinking, man, has this scene blown up more than I realized? And the story that I wrote was telling me that, yes, it had. And so as soon as I was done writing that, I set out to get to as many Wyatt, Southall, Caitlin, and Lance shows as I could. And it turns out that something really, really special was happening. And I just thought, I can't miss that. I can't spend my whole life setting myself up to be this journalist of record for all of Red Dirt. And now it's having the biggest moment it's ever going to have. And Turnpike are in arenas, and Wyatt's got an Island record deal. I can't watch all that happen and set it out. So not only did I decide right then and there, a year ago, to write Red Dirt Unplugged, I decided I was going to put it out this year. And so I started out by going last November to the Tumbleweed, where the Great Divide were playing a show. And I went and I took notes like I was going to write about it the next day for Rolling Stone. But what I did instead was I wrote that review. They played 27 songs. I wrote a whole review, and then I broke the review into 27 parts. And I made that the lead in to 27 chapters about Red Dirt music and all the people that are influencing it today. And not all of them are directly tied to the Great Divide, and not all of them are even Red Dirt, but they were all artists that I thought of when I sat there that night in Stillwater last year. And what you're left with at the end is a ton of really good stories, because I'm 4 years better as a writer now than I was when Red Dirt came out. And you're left with a ton of really, really cool ties to Red Dirt as far back as you personally want to take it. Because in the process of that, I ended up spending the last year with Wyatt as he went through some of the biggest highs and lows of his life, and everything from his Red Rocks debut to the mental health break he took. I was in the wings for that, and that is going to make for a great story. The stuff that's already been out in the world in Rolling Stone about Wyatt that I wrote is only a tiny fraction of what's going in the book. And it is just a wonderful, compelling story that weaves so many eras and people and songs and Red Dirt all together. And I was just super happy and honored that he trusted me enough with his story to let me do it. And then I asked Cody Canada to write the foreword to it back in the summer. And long story short, now Red Dirt Unplugged ends with an entire full band interview that I got to do with Cross Canadian Ragweed just this month. And it's only a few weeks old. And I was able to, again, something else I couldn't do if I had a publishing deal and a deadline of July. I can just go back and say, no, this is going in the book now. It's how it's going to be. So I've talked to their team and them personally, and we know there hasn't been a full band Ragweed interview in 15 years, but we think it might be more like 18 or 20. So having all four members on the record opening up about what their world is like now at the end of this book is the biggest icing on the biggest cake that I'll ever get in my life. And I am incredibly excited for people to get their eyes on it, because it's fascinating. It's fun. It's inspiring. And it's also vintage ragweed when you read it. So I hope people that hear this and are wondering how all the stuff that we've just been talking about all play together in the work that I do. That's a great example. That's how it happens.
Yep. And I'm pumped up, first of all. Like, I'm really excited for this book, and especially those stories and I'm going to be very careful with what I say here. I don't want to step on anyone's toes. But in that interview, how was the dynamic with it being like all these years later and having the guys back together and an interview and everything?
Every single person in Ragweed, and I don't know when this comes out, but I know that we're recording this in the time frame when Ragweed has restarted their social media and their website. And yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of anticipation out there. I can tell you that the conversations I had were really fun. There were more laughs than anything. But when I hear those guys talk about how much they miss one another, I got on my side of the microphone, I teared up several times. It was really special and really cool to see them talking about Ragweed and each other in such positive and high esteem terms. And it was frankly badass.
Yeah, very badass. Yeah. Awesome, man. So hell yeah, man. Thanks for hopping on. I have one more question for you, and you're probably the best person to ask this. When you compare the Red Dirt scene now, and then, which you've lived through both and seen both, what is the biggest difference, whether positive or negative? Is there a thing that you see that is like this is way better than it was back then, or maybe even vice versa? Or you got a thought on that?
Yeah, the influences that Southall, Wyatt, Caitlin, the influences on this new wave of Red Dirt stars are much farther reaching. Wyatt Flores is likely to be influenced by Tyler Childers and 49 Winchester as he is the Turnpike Troubadour. He did a surprise show late night last week in Nashville, and it was a full band original set after the Americana Awards, which he was he was nominated but didn't win. But he did four covers, and those covers were there was Tyler Childers, there was Sturgill Simpson, and there were just a couple more, but they ran. Oh, one of them was Cross Canadian Ragweed.
One was Ragweed, yeah.
One of them was Ragweed, yeah. I put the whole song on my Instagram. He sang Alabama, and that somebody that is so tied, that is so completely tethered and shackled, and just never going to leave Oklahoma, and whose Red Dirt roots are too deep to ever cut or break. For somebody like that to be as equally influenced by Sturgill and by Tyler Childers and 49 Winchester as he is Turnpike and Ragweed, that's the difference. So Red Dirt now sounds a lot more broad than it did, but Tom Skinner and Bob Childers and all the forefathers that influenced the Great Divide and Ragweed, they still get their due too. And I think that's super special too, because that's how the scene evolved and survived. And there was a time we didn't know that was going to happen, but it sure as hell did.
Yeah. And real quick before we go, like with Wyatt, man, like, so when it comes to like me getting really hooked on new artists, it usually takes me to see them live to really be all the way in. That's just how I've always been. And I got to see Wyatt open for Treaty Oak at in a Lexington, Kentucky rodeo. They have like a big rodeo circuit, a big old arena in Lexington. And man, like standing from backstage and looking out, it was insane. It was packed to the gills to see this kid from Stillwater like go out there and just completely rock it. And like, has the juice to be bigger, like is big or if not bigger than like a guy like Zach Bryan now, I think.
I see that X factor in him. I see that reach out and hold the crowd in the palm of your hand with him. Wait, mm-hmm. That's not me talking. That was Mike McClure talking after we watched him at the Opry a few months ago. that Wyatt has that. Wyatt will absolutely punch you through your chest and grab your heart and make you pay attention to him. And he will do it in this soft-spoken, sincere way. And you can walk into his show, and I've seen it. I saw it happen at Red Rocks when he opened for Turnpike, because Turnpike fans are not 22 years old and on TikTok, but they were all in their seats, 10,000 people in their seats at Red Rocks, because they trust Turnpike, and they had given them the benefit of the doubt that enough to listen to this opener, and it was Wyatt. And I remember the first song, people were sitting on their seats, politely clapping, and I've got this great video of his last song when that entire place, 10,000 people were on their feet, screaming the lyrics to West of Tulsa back to him, and they had tears down their eyes. That's what Wyatt does. And I think we should all count ourselves lucky that there's an artist from our scene that's capable of doing that right now, because it's really, really, really incredible. And I look forward to seeing what's next for him too.
Absolutely. Well, Josh, thanks for hopping on. It was great talking to you. I've been wanting to do this for a while. So
thanks for having me.
Of course. And before we head out, I know we said the plugs a couple times. We'll do it right here again, just so people could remember where to go to pre-order Red Dirt Unplugged. So if you have any plugs or socials you want to throw out there, the floor is yours.
You got it. So Red Dirt Unplugged comes out December 13th. I chose that date because Wyatt Flores is headlining the Ryman Auditorium for the first time that night, and his openers are The Great Divide and Lance Rourke. Those artists are all on the cover of the book. Comes out December 13th. It's called Red Dirt Unplugged. You can pre-order it right now at reddirt-unplugged.com, or you can go all over the socials and look for Red Dirt Unplugged on all of them. I'm active on all of them, including TikTok. And if you want to see the absolute dumbest shit in your life, just watch me trying to promote this book on TikTok, because I know I'm in my mid-40s on an app that's meant for late teens, and I am leaning all the way into it. So I hope that's worth your while, too. But you can hit me up on any of those, and or if you just want the book, it's reddirt-unplugged.com. Pre-orders are as important to me as they are to artists and their albums. They're how I get my own self to all these shows, because my journalism work that I do with music is just separate from my life at the Times in New York. So it's really important. And if you think you might like it, or know somebody who might like it, or you're just in the holiday spirit because it comes out in December, go get your hands on it.
Hell yes. Heard the man. And everyone, also check out Raise Rowdy, a Rowdy Alternative. We have our website, raiserowdy.com, and all the socials, just Google us, you'll find us. So thanks a lot again, Josh. It was fun. Yeah. And thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you next time. Oh,
thanks.
My boots would look good on your bed, and I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. You've been turning me on all night, so why don't you and I run and tell your friends who's gonna take you home tonight? Try to make a mess of this, boys, now.